He sat at his desk and shoved papers out of the way. The envelope was addressed to Professor N. Ray Attlee, University of Virginia School of Law, Charlottesville, Virginia. The E's and O's were smudged together. A new ribbon had been needed for a decade. The judge didn't believe in zip codes either. The N was for Nathan, after the general, but few people knew it. One of their uglier fights had been over the son's decision to drop Nathan altogether and plow through life simply as Ray. The judge's letters were always sent to the law school, never to his son's apartment in downtown Charlottesville. The judge liked titles and important addresses, and he wanted folks in Clanton, even the postal workers, to know that his son was a professor of law. It was unnecessary. Ray had been teaching and writing for 13 years, and those who mattered in Ford County knew it. He opened the envelope and unfolded a single sheet of paper. It, too, was grandly embossed with the judge's name and former title and address, again minus the zip code. The old man probably had an unlimited supply of the stationery. It was addressed to both Ray and his younger brother, Forrest, the only two offspring of a bad marriage that had ended in 1969 with the death of their mother. As always, the message was brief. Please make arrangements to appear in my study on Sunday, May 7th at 5 p.m. to discuss the administration of my estate. Sincerely, Reuben V. Attlee. The distinctive signature had shrunk and looked unsteady. For years it had been emblazoned across orders and decrees that had changed countless lives. Decrees of divorce, child custody, termination of parental rights, adoptions, orders settling will contests, election contests, land disputes, annexation fights. The judge's autograph had been authoritative and well-known. Now it was the vaguely familiar scrawl of a very sick old man. Sick or not, though, Ray knew that he would be present in his father's study at the appointed time. He had just been summoned, and as irritating as it was, he had no doubt that he and his brother would drag themselves before his honor for one more lecture. It was typical of the judge to pick a day that was convenient for him without consulting anybody else. It was the nature of the judge, and perhaps most judges for that matter, to set dates for hearings and deadlines with little regard for the convenience of others. Such heavy-handedness was learned and even required when dealing with crowded dockets, reluctant litigants, busy lawyers, lazy lawyers. But the judge had run his family in pretty much the same manner as he had run his courtroom, and that was the principal reason Ray Attlee was teaching law in Virginia and not practicing it in Mississippi. He read the summons again, then put it away, on top of the pile of current matters to deal with. He walked to the window and looked out at the courtyard where everything was in bloom. He wasn't angry or bitter, just frustrated that his father could once again dictate so much. But the old man was dying, he told himself. Give him a break. There wouldn't be many more trips home. The judge's estate was cloaked with mystery. The principal asset was the house, an antebellum hand-me-down from the same Attlee who had fought with General Forrest. On a shady street in old Atlanta, it would be worth over $1 million, but not in Clanton. It sat in the middle of 5 neglected acres 3 blocks off the town square. The floors sagged, the roof leaked. Paint had not touched the walls in Ray's lifetime. He and his brother could sell it for perhaps $100,000, but the buyer would need twice that to make it livable. Neither would ever live there. In fact, Forrest had not set foot in the house in many years. The house was called Maple Run, as if it were some grand estate with a staff and a social calendar. The last worker had been Irene, the maid. She had died 4 years earlier, and since then no one had vacuumed the floors or touched the furniture with polish. The judge paid a local felon $20 a week to cut the grass, and he did so with great reluctance. $80 a month was robbery, in his learned opinion. When Ray was a child, his mother referred to their home as Maple Run. They never had dinners at their home, but rather at Maple Run. Their address was not the Attlees on 4th Street, but instead it was Maple Run on 4th Street. Few other folks in Clanton had names for their homes. She died from an aneurysm, and they laid her on a table in the front parlor. For 2 days, the town stopped by and paraded across the front porch, through the foyer, through the parlor for last respects, then to the dining room for punch and cookies. Ray and Forrest hid in the attic and cursed their father for tolerating such a spectacle. That was their mother lying down there, a pretty young woman now pale and stiff in an open coffin. Forrest had always called it Maple Ruin. The red and yellow maples that once lined the street had died of some unknown disease. Their rotted stumps had never been cleared. 4 huge oaks shaded the front lawn. They shed leaves by the ton, far too many for anyone to rake and gather. And at least twice a year, the oaks would lose a branch that would fall and crash somewhere under the house, where it might or might not get removed. The house stood there year after year, decade after decade, taking punches, but never falling. It was still a handsome house, a Georgian with columns, once a monument to those who had built it, and now a sad reminder of a declining family. Ray wanted nothing to do with it. For him, the house was filled with unpleasant memories, and each trip back depressed him. He certainly couldn't afford the financial black hole of maintaining an estate that ought to be bulldozed. Forrest would burn it before he owned it.